Hello and welcome to another episode of Dev Radio. Today we're going to be continuing our series that's focused on Game Maker by Yo-Yo Games. But we're going to take a little twist here as we're going to focus on something that technically you would need in any games that you would put out there in an app. And to help us with the topic, which is images and sounds, how to find or make them, we have a special guest, Mr. Brett Statham, a Microsoft technical evangelist based out of Southern California. Brett, nice to have you on board.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Well, I do want to say congratulations, because in the past year, we were at a hackathon together, and your team took first place, so, you know, very nice. I remember when I was at that hackathon, I was working on a game using GameMaker, and one of the most interesting challenges we had in that short amount of time was coming up with those resources, the graphics, the sounds and stuff. So I guess my first question for you is, as a developer of games yourself, why do you think this topic is so important?
Well, you probably haven't played a whole lot of games lately that didn't have some sort of graphical or sound element. You know, I started back, my first computer was a good old Trash 80. And so I used to play role-playing games and things like that that were just character games, words printed on the screen, et cetera. And you know, back when a Trash 80 was the best computer you could get, hey, you know, those were pretty cool games. But anymore, you know, so much of a game is setting the environment for the player and sort of bringing them into that game world. And that's something that's difficult to do with just characters on the screen. And so having graphics and sounds that sort of let the player forget that they're sitting, like I am, in a hole under the stairs or something like that, but rather actually living the life of the character inside the game. And so you really need those extra elements to sort of, you know, make that world real.
Yeah, and I don't know, I guess I speak for maybe some or many developers, but I tend to be pretty good at the coding aspect of it, but when it comes to this, getting those sounds or that creative image piece, that could be a little challenging for myself. So I would like to ask you, maybe let's just start with the topic of sounds or music. What resources have you found to be helpful in that regard?
Well, actually, probably the most useful resource I found is myself. And I don't mean that egotistically. I actually mean it in that I started looking at creating games using XNA a couple of years ago. And when I started doing it, I was like, I can't write a game. You know, I'm not going to be able to go out and write, you know, the top-selling, you know, game on Windows Phone or something like that. I just wouldn't know how to do it. And then when I actually started looking at the programming of a game, you know, it's just a loop, you know. So I write a loop, I draw a picture on the screen, I move it, I draw it, I move it, I draw it, I move it, I draw it. And you go, wow, this is actually not as hard as I thought it was. Until you go, uh-oh, I need game assets. I need those sounds and I need those graphics. And the reason why I say the best resource I found at that point was myself is because I started to think, I got to go out somewhere else. I've got to go find somebody else that's going to be able to do these for me. Right. And I actually started. I'm like, well, who do I know amongst my friends or my peers that are great sound engineers or whatever? And I came up empty. And I thought, well, you know what? Just so I can get through this demo, let me go find a free sound tool, stick my mouth on the microphone and make a noise and see what comes out. Right. And it actually isn't as bad as you might think, you know, using the tools that are out there and even a basic headset or, you know, obviously the more money you spend on the equipment, the better it's going to get. But, you know, a regular old headset that you pick up at the big box store in the corner or whatever, and you can actually make survivable sounds to at least get you through the demo and dev phase, if not the actual sounds that end up in the game itself.
Hmm. Now, go ahead. I'm just curious, did you happen to have any sound tools or recording software that you used that you thought was decent?
Well, so for the software, Audacity for me is the go-to tool for recording actual sound, right, out of a microphone, recording it, or opening up found sound that you get out on the internet or whatever. Normally what you're going to get back is a waveform. And for a waveform, you know, MP3, WAV files, OGG, something like that, Audacity for me is the go-to tool for that. It's open source. You can get it up off of SourceForge. And I actually have a blog post that I just put up that has a ton of links to the tools that I'll mention here. Cool. And you can find all that up there as well.
That's great. So, you know, I did know this about you because I think it was a couple years ago, I saw you give a presentation in Southern California, and you were creating a game on the fly, and you actually were using sound effects even from the audience. So I know that we can be resourceful there, so that's good. What about recommendations you would make maybe beyond your own voice? Anything with regard to custom sounds or even music for that matter?
Yeah. So for, you know, I was talking about waveforms, and Audacity is a fantastic waveform editor. There may be better, more professional tools out there, but again, I'm a programmer. I'm not a sound engineer. So for me, Audacity has been able to do everything I've needed it to do from a waveform perspective. But what if I wanted to create, you know, that's great for me making explosions or, you know, pretending I'm playing cops and robbers in the background, you know, making gun noises or whatever. But what for music or something like that, where you need something more melodic, I can't sing, then there's great sequencing tools out there, and they're all over the board. In fact, I've even used some web-based music sequencers where you can go in and click and say, I want a bass here, and give me the hi-hat drum here. One I've been using lately is from a company called Open Labs. They have an inexpensive tool called Stage Light. And by inexpensive, I mean it's $9.99, so it's very accessible.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so with that, you can, you know, sequence out your music. And again, even if you're not a great musician, it's not difficult, you know, to go in and say, give me a bass beat, you know, every other, you know, note. Give me a long bass note here. Give me a little piano ding dong here and there. And you can actually do that pretty simply using a sequencing tool. And like I say, at least be able to get some music that you can use as an asset while you're developing your game. But really, I think you'll find that once you get in and start playing with those, you can create quite usable music that ends up being the actual music in the game itself.
That's great. That's very good. Now, so we talked about the audio piece, but now let's get down to our discussion with the images. What would you say would be a good suggestion? Let's start with just images that are already done. You don't have to do any of the work. Do you have any recommendations there?
And the same would come back for sound as well. And that's thankfully probably one of those things where I don't know all the resources out there, meaning that there's so many of them.
Right.
You'll stumble across them yourself as you get out looking. A teammate of ours, Jeremy Foster, has a great page that he's built at codefoster.com/media that has links off to free open libraries of sound, as well as free open libraries of game art and all that kind of stuff that you can use. And, you know, depending on where you go, the licensing or the pricing may be anywhere from free and open to closed and pricey, but they'll range through there. Also, the internet obviously is a great place to go out and find artists who would sell their time to you and create the graphics for you, you know, custom graphics, relatively inexpensively as well. And again, check up codefoster.com/media for links off to a lot of those great resources there.
Well, hey, I hope that link's also on your blog post.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So we can just point him to that. That's great.
Yeah.
But Jeremy's going to love the link, love. That's great. Now, you know, I'm starting to think, and I'm sure everyone would start to feel this way too, once you start to get into already created work, now there's this question of, but am I going to have to worry about, you know, I took this and maybe I got it off of a free, you know, these are free sounds or free. But is there anything that a developer should keep in mind with regard to maybe licensing?
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, as you go out to the various sites that are out there that have libraries available for you to consume, they will typically next to that publish information about the licensing. And there's, you know, all these different open licenses that are out there in Creative Commons and the Berkeley licensing or this, that, and the other. You want to go make sure that you read through that license information and that you're willing to conform to the constraints of that license. And I would also go so far as to say, depending on how successful you want this game to be, you probably shouldn't just grab graphics off the internet from which you don't know the license. Don't assume that because there wasn't a license stated that there isn't a license in place. And so for me, you're safer finding one that has a clear license stated, and then finding one that, you know, that you agree to the terms to, and then use those.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. So, well, you know, and of course, one thing you wouldn't have to worry about at all is if you're the one who made the image yourself.
Right.
So, you know, I have to say this about Brett Statham, for those who are listening. Brett on our team is one of these guys that you consider what doesn't he know? I mean, the guy can do so many programming languages. He can do Azure. He can go off and do mobile technology, and then all of a sudden he's an artist. And so the thing about Brett is that Brett's really actually been used within our team for some of his artwork, even for some site-level stuff, in addition to the stuff he does for programs and games. So I want to know, what do you do? What's the magic behind the scenes, Brett? What tools are you using in order to create these cool graphics?
Well, actually, in my blog post, and that's at aka.ms/BSGT for Brett Statham Game Tools, I point off to the tools that I use most. I've mentioned Audacity and StageLight for a music perspective, and those are great for waveforms and sequencing. For graphics, you got your bitmap graphics and your vector graphics. So bitmap graphics, I use GIMP, and for vector graphics, I use Inkscape. And the reason I use those tools is that they have all the power that I need to be able to create game art. I don't need the extra capabilities that a more pricey tool might offer me to do game art. And they're free, right? And so that means I can go to an event and I can, you know, talk about these tools to developers, and I know those developers can go get those tools today and be able to use them. So that's why I love them. And then, like you were talking about, you know, a session that I did where we were sort of creating the media on the fly. And yeah, for me, it was about trying to show developers not to be afraid of this, right? You really can open up one of these tools and pretty easily be able to create, you know, your first couple of passes may be a little weak, but the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And so be able to create really useful graphics. There's a great blog from a guy named Chris Hildebrand, and I've got a link to him on my post there as well. But he has some fantastic tutorials on being able to create game characters. And so I kind of use those. I pull up Inkscape, I start messing around with them, and you really can create some very usable game characters very rapidly. And in fact, around that, I've even built my own template that you can pull up in Inkscape that has a full character already blocked out for you, and then you can just go in and start tweaking the shapes to turn it in to your own custom character.
I see. So, you know, for those who are listening, Brett just says, it's so easy. You could just easily go create a character. You know, the master has spoken. But I feel like if that's really true, I'm going to put you on the spot. That's really, really true, why don't you demonstrate what it would take to create like a hero type of a character inside of a game? You willing to do that?
Sure, you bet.
All right, let's take a look.
All right. Well, so first of all, I mentioned this blog popped up on my other screen there. From a guy named Chris Hildebrand. That's up at 2D Game Art for Programmers. But you can, again, get that off of my blog post. And in fact, I'll show you that really quick, aka.msbsgt. And in there, I sort of go through and talk about the difference between bitmap and vector tools, give you links off to the tools I use, GIMP and Inkscape, as well as for sound, talk about waveform versus sequencers, and a link off to Audacity, as well as StageLight. So you can get all those. And then down at the bottom, there's some other great links. Michael, you yourself have an awesome Game Maker resource page up there. I talked about Jeremy Foster's media page. And then I mentioned that I've got this character template. So I'll go open that up in another tab. But let me first go off to 2D Game Art for Programmers. And this is just an artist out there in the wild who has a fantastic blog with a ton of tutorials. And the reason why I came across him is I was using Inkscape, and he uses Inkscape for his tutorials, which is awesome. And he walks you through a ton of different ones here. But the one that I specifically got a ton of value out of was this one on creating a game character. And he sort of just starts telling you, you know, what are the different parts of a game character, and thinking about, you know, existing characters and what their different graphical shapes would be. And then down here, he sort of starts walking you through, you know, how could you, you know, just as Michael said, how could you use a vector tool to go in and sort of create the hero for your game or something like that. And so I sat down with Inkscape, I sat down with his tutorial, and just started walking through it. And it was that similar aha moment for me that I had when I just started looking at creating XNA games of, you know what, this isn't as inaccessible as you might have thought. If you can draw a circle, you can really start to build up, you know, the different elements of the characters and graphics and things like that in your games. And so he's just using circles and rectangles and ellipses and things like that, deforming them slightly and coming up with these characters. So let me do that. Now I've got, well, in fact, if you look at his, you know, he starts with the head and then you fill it out and then eventually you come in and you add the body parts and all that. And if you do it correctly, you end up with this fully articulated, meaning that you can move the arms and hands and head, etc. So you can put your character in different poses. And it can be a lot of work to start with out with that. And so I mentioned that I have a template that I created. It's my Inkscape game character template, and it's based off his tutorial over there. But basically, you can come just download the zip file, and in fact, in the zip, I also include the character in different poses to create a walking version of your animated character out there. But you can see I'm just using circles and ellipses and some slightly deformed shapes to create the basic structure of a character, and then you can tweak it and make it your own. So I'll start with that. I'll just go ahead and download this zip file. Let's go make a little folder here, game demo. I'll save it out there. And unzip this guy. And you'll notice that inside there, I've got some SVG files. I also work a lot with another game framework called Construct 2, and I have a sample game of the character walking in that one. But I've got the regular character and then one where he's walking. And so I'm going to open up the regular one. Notice this is an SVG file. And SVG is the standard file format that Inkscape uses. But the reason I love it is, as a programmer, SVG is just XML. So it's an XML definition of the vector art inside this image here. But I can just right-click on it and open it up with Inkscape. And I've got some comments and things off on the right, but here's my character sitting up there. And now if I were to take the character and accidentally move his head, notice that it just drags off to the side, but I can see this little shadow of where he used to be. And that's because in Inkscape, you can have what's called layers. And with my smaller screen here, I'm not seeing my layer bar. Where'd you go? Oops. Sorry, let me pop that up. There we go, layers. And notice that I've got this wireframe layer back here that I can hide if I want to, or don't want to have to see that original version back there. So let me put the head back and hide him. So I just Control Z to undo their normal Windows undo stuff. But here's the head of my character, and if I zoomed in on him, he really is just a circle. So I could have just grabbed the circle tool over here and just drawn a circle, you know, to make the head. But with vector tools, these shapes maintain their mathematical properties or characteristics. So this is, in fact, a circle, or more formally, an ellipse. And if I were to come in here and grab it, you know, I could skew it and notice it maintains its elliptical shape. It's just skewed, or I could grab it and rotate it. That didn't show much there, but skew it more and then rotate it. There you go. You can see me rotating, etc. But at all times, it sort of stayed an ellipse. In fact, I can grab this other tool to edit the points on this. And as I drag it, notice that it's staying elliptical. It's keeping its elliptical behavior. Or in fact, I could even do something like this and turn it into a pie slice and sort of get, you know, the Pac-Man head, if you will, out there. But it knows that this is a shape that is an ellipse, and I can do pie slices and arcs and all that kind of stuff with this. Well, for my head, that's not what I want, right? Let me just undo back here and get back to my original head. What I really want to be able to do is turn this guy into a morphable path, if you will. So I can click on this guy, and from the path menu say convert that object, that ellipse, just into a path. And this is really now a curve that just happens to look like a circle. And I can now grab any one of these nodes and, you know, just, you know, fully deform them. There's my, you know, there's the cone head character, if you will, right? And so if I wanted to give this guy a nose, I could just grab this and drag it out, but that's a pretty big nose. I need some more control points on this guy. So you can add more points. I could just point to some point on the curve and double click, and then I can start to drag him out in different places, right? But I'd really like to have a lot of different control points. So I can do that pretty simply. I'm just going to select, oops, sorry, undo that last one. Select all of my control points, and I'll just click this add button, and it's going to add a new one in the middle of all the selected ones. And they do it again, and now I got a ton of little control points here that I can start to use to deform this shape, right? So I just started out with the circle, added a bunch of control points, and now I've got this shape here that I can start to sort of customize into, you know, my character. And let's say I want to drag out a nose form down here. Maybe that's a little bit low for a nose. So I can undo that, go back and maybe drag the nose out up here, you know, deform it a little bit, make it look sort of nose shape-ish, if you will. He's got kind of an ugly gray head, so let's go give him a little bit more of a skin tone. I've got this color palette down here that I can pick colors from, or if you want, you can go in and customize the colors. I can go in and get into the color editors or even do gradients and that kind of stuff. So there's the head of him. Let's give him a couple of eyeballs here, so I'll drag a circle out. Now, it used the last color, so I don't see it. Let's just fill it in with black. Oh, and it remembered I had an arc before, so I'm going to tell it to just make it a full circle. So there's the black eyeball, and again, I can sort of just start to distort and transform this circle a little bit to create an eye. Let's give him a second eye here. We'll size that up a little bit, right? Oh, that's an awfully big second eye. There we go. But the great thing about these vectors is that I can do that. I can grab one of these shapes and completely deform it. I can move it. I can change its colors. If this were a bitmap, these would be individual pixels. And once I've committed them, they're difficult to move and to change. And so that's what's great about a vector tool like Inkscape or Adobe Illustrator or CorelDRAW or whatever. One of the other things that I love about vector tools is the ability to do Boolean operations, right? So I want the white of the eyeball. And so what I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to make a duplicate copy. And I could copy and paste this, or I could just duplicate it of this eyeball. And notice now I've got two of them. I'm going to color this second one in white and just make it a little bit smaller here. And we'll stick it up here in the top, you know, sort of side of this guy's eye. But it's sticking out here. And notice I can zoom in on this vector, and notice how it maintains its nice crisp quality. If this were a bitmap, you'd see all the blocky pixels by now. But really, I want this white of the eye to be cut off so that it fits inside the black. So I'm going to grab the black eye again, duplicate it one more time, and then I can grab the white and the new black circle and ask just to get the intersection. Just show me the pixels or the shape where they overlap, and I get that nice little white of the eye coming in there. And notice that I'm not really doing art, right? I'm really just drawing circles and now performing Boolean operations. And what programmer doesn't love Boolean operations, right? So let's make another one up here. So again, shrink it down a little bit. And I'm not even trying to be too precise about this because a lot of what art is organic, right? You want things to sort of look and feel organic as you create them. So we'll come in here and get an intersection on those. And so there I've got my character head and a couple of white eyeballs, etc. He needs a little bit of a chin. He looks a little round right now, so let's go in here and grab a chin down, and here I'm getting too many shapes, in fact, or too many dots, so I'm going to delete some of these control points that I have here, and let's drag them down there. That's a little bit better there. Maybe even come up like that, whatever. So, you know, I've got a little bit of a chin down there, and now he needs a mouth, so we'll stick a circle in here for the mouth, and again, I'm just going to convert that to an ellipse, or sorry, into a path, so I can deform it a little bit. Rotate it maybe a little bit, stick it down there in the corner, and again, I'm going to duplicate him. I'll drag it down a little bit and make this one a red, and then one more copy of the white, grab the red, and grab their intersection. Path intersect, boom. And notice, again, you may not call this art, but I'm very quickly sort of just building up the basics of that graphical character and remembering that I had this blog post that I'd pulled up earlier that really was just sort of walking me through those steps, right? Boolean operations, deforming existing shapes, etc. And you start to come up with, you know, some character that you can use. Let's give this guy some eyeballs. Or sorry, eyebrows. He already had eyeballs. And again, one of my favorite things is just being able to convert it into a path, and then I can deform that shape. I can zoom in on this so I can see it. There's my eyebrow. I can take that and rotate it, move it over there, make another copy of it, rotate it up, and then there's my eyebrow. Cool. So starting to get my character here. Maybe we need a hat for him. So let's go drag out a hat, and accidentally did a second one, and we'll give it a just sort of match up with the blog post there. I'll give him a little bit of a green color there for the hat, and that may be a little tall. Let's shrink that down some. All right, well, good enough for now. In fact, let's, why don't we do this? There, that's better. That's more what I'm looking for. And we need the top of the hat, so we'll go give him a top of the hat. And notice, I think the only shape I've grabbed off the toolbar so far has been an ellipse. You haven't seen me draw anything freehand, right? I'm just, I'm just snapping into these lines right now. Let's drag them out that way. There we go. All right, so there's the top of my hat. I'm fighting the snap lines there. These grid lines give you a great way to snap shapes up to it, but I'm so close to it right now that everything wants to snap to it. All right, but so there's the top of my hat. Now let's actually go do a rectangle. We need sort of the belt of his hat, so I'll grab a rectangle here. Let's fill that in black, and I'll just rotate this guy up here as if he were the belt of the hat. Resize him down a little bit. There we go. Needs to be a little bit taller. Let's not do that. Let's grab this. Cool. And again, I'm going to take this. Right now, it remembers it's a rectangle, so I'll change it into a path, and I can fatten that up. And it really shouldn't go straight across. Maybe it should curve down a little bit here. Let's move that up some. There we go. And so I can zoom out on this and just grab one of those edges and just pull it down and kind of give it a little curved shape. All right, so there's the curve of my hat. We'll pull that corner out some. There we go. Starting to make something that looks like a hat for this guy. All right, and he needs a buckle. So let's go grab a square. We'll grab a little buckle out there, fill it in grayish. I'll duplicate him, so just Control D to duplicate it, and then shrink it down just a little bit. And so there's really two rectangles there. I'm going to grab the one in the back, shift-click on the one in the front, and then path, difference, boom, and there's my buckle, right? So I can now just grab that, rotate it, stick it up there. All right, there's the buckle for my hat, et cetera, right? And so you notice that I'm kind of going through this quickly since that was the challenge. But you can see I'm really just kind of following, that was the wrong one there, there we go, the same sort of pattern that he was doing there. Notice, how about for a feather? So, you know, that feather is really nothing more than just a circle and some triangles cut out of it. So let's go make it, right? So I can jump back over here to my character. And we'll zoom in on his head again, and I'll drag a circle out here for the feather. Let's give it a nice yellow. I don't know if that's nice, but it's yellow. And I'll deform it into a path again so I can sort of shape this guy out. And in fact, you know, that's actually kind of the shape I want. He's just backwards, so I'll grab him and rotate him. There you go. Cool. There, I'm getting my feather. And maybe we'll curve this edge out a little bit more than it was. And so I've got these handles that I can grab, etc. We'll curve that guy up a little bit, maybe even down. There we go. Now I'm really starting to get this feather shape, right? But I need the triangle cutouts on it. So I'll just go make a triangle really easily. Now you can, in fact, do it from here and say, hey, just give me a shape that has three corners. And as I drag it out, I've got a nice little triangle. But if you wanted something a little more organic, you could use the Bezier curve to just click, make a point, click, make a point, click, make a point, and click to close it back up, and now I've got this triangle that I could create there, right? And I hate to call that freehand art, right? I was really just drawing some straight lines to make a triangle. So not high-end graphic skills. Now, you'll notice that the shape actually has an outline, which is black, and a pink fill. So down here, if I right-click on a color, I can say set that as the stroke. That's the outline. And you can even go in and play around with your stroke thicknesses and all that kind of stuff. There's a tool that we have for that, which is, again, off my screen here. Sorry, it keeps grabbing document properties. Try that. So here's fill and stroke, and I can go to my stroke style, and I could fatten that stroke if I wanted, and you can see the thick blue line on there. Well, in this case, I actually don't want a stroke at all. So down here, the very left-hand corner of my palette is an X, and I'm going to right-click and set the stroke, and that'll remove the stroke, and I get just the fill on my shape here. But so I can shrink him down a little bit, and we'll zoom in on the feather. Moved his mouth. Control Z or undo is one of my favorite keystrokes, pretty much in all of Windows. But we'll duplicate this guy just a few times, rotate him here and there. And I'm just trying to create the overlap is going to be where these feathers cut out of the one in the background, or these triangles cut out the one in the background. So here I picked all three of them just by shift-clicking. I'm going to group them together, right-click, and actually, why isn't group there? I don't know why group isn't there. Okay, well, I'll just Control-G to group them, and then I can duplicate them and flip them vertically. So now I've got three more of them up there, right? And then I'll just ungroup these guys. There's ungroup. There we go. So right now they're all individual shapes, and so I could grab my triangle here. Actually, we probably need one more. There we go. Add them down there. Yeah, looks good. I could grab this back yellow feather and then shift-click on the triangle in front and do path difference. And notice it cuts the triangle out. Well, so I have to sort of repeat that a whole bunch of times. A simpler way to do that would be to make all these triangles be one shape. So I'm picking them all right now just by click or shift-clicking on them. And then I'm going to union them all together. So that's my one of my other Boolean operations. So this is now just one big shape that happens to have a bunch of triangles-looking things in it. And so now I can grab the feather in the background, grab the single union set of feathers, path, difference, and I've cut all the triangles out of my feather there. You know, that almost looks a little more like a fish than feather, but you get the point, right? Now, in this case, I've got a problem, and that's that he's sticking in front of the band. The feathers should really be behind him. And again, with vector tools, this is awesome because there's this idea of layering. So I can just move this guy lower until he's behind the hat band, and now I've got the feather stuck behind my hat band, right? Similarly, if I wanted to give him some hair, right, I could come in and just sort of draw a shape for the hair, remembering that whatever's behind the hat is going to be hidden. So that's a pretty ugly shape. I just sort of clicked and drew lines. I'm going to grab all those points and tell it to just make them auto points. There you go. And now I can sort of grab the individual nodes, and it sort of keeps the curve for me as I go, right? And let's fill it in maybe. Let's get that off the eyebrow. There we go. Fill it in maybe with the same color. So I'll grab my eyedropper and click on the eyebrow to get the same color as the eyebrow, and then I'll remove the stroke, and then we just move the hair back using that move to the back thing. Get him back behind the hat. There he is. All right, so there's the hair of my character, right? Now, so hopefully what you get from that is the point that, yeah, you can just using simple shapes, using Boolean operations, using the layering tools, and that sort of stuff, create, you know, usable graphics. Now, I wouldn't necessarily call what I just made art, but I was trying to get through that relatively quickly to make the point. The one other thing I'll show you with my template is that obviously I've got shapes for all the other parts of the body, but these are all now grouped together. Notice I've got his whole arm and I can move it, but not only that, I could rotate the arm. And so notice I can start to pose my character different ways. And in fact, I could come into the group and grab just his lower arm and rotate it as well, right? So I can start to shape this character and put him into different positions just by picking the elements and rotating him out. So did that meet the challenge, Michael?
It met the challenge, but now you got my curiosity up. Obviously, we're seeing how this is working within the context of Inkscape. Now you want to port this over to a game framework such as GameMaker. What would a developer need to do?
Well, so, and that goes back to this question of vector versus bitmaps, right? So vector art, and in fact, something like SVG is great because it's just XML, it's just data, but it requires a lot of processing. Especially in a game where I need this guy to move very quickly and rapidly. And so the graphics processors that are built into, you know, even our phones are fantastic at manipulating bitmaps, not vectors. And so really what I need to do is get this guy out as a bitmap, right? And so PNGs, JPEGs, things like that, those are the graphics tools that we're used to, graphics formats that we're sort of used to seeing in games. And so with this guy, I'm saving it as an SVG. But if I were to select him, I could then go to the file menu and export him out. And now Inkscape only supports export to bitmap. That's the only type that it supports, right? But I could export this guy out, and I get to pick my target size. You know, I might say, hey, in my game, I need him to be, you know, 96 pixels tall, and it'll size the bitmap down, maintain the aspect ratio for me, and I can go, you know, spit this guy out somewhere. You know, let's say we call this Ranger Michael. Or something like that. And so this will be a PNG. I could export that out. And if I went into that directory, you know, there's my Ranger Michael PNG. And in fact, GIMP right now thinks that's my default editor for PNGs. And I can open him up. And you'll notice that in there, he's now a bunch of pixels. And he right. looks very pixelated because I exported him out at 96, you know, pixels sure. high. And so if I zoom out on him, though, at actual size, hey, he looks great. But that's the thing with bitmaps. Bitmaps look good at the size you created them at or smaller, but they don't scale up well. You scale them up, and we have to start inventing pixels or just making the existing pixels blockier, right, sure. To sort of fill up that space. But now I could pull him in. Now, the other thing is that's just him in one pose. If you were going right. to animate him out, you know, you'd want to maybe, like, grab that other template that I had. I have that up on another screen there. There we go. This guy. And so this is just another SVG where you could take those articulated body parts and start to, you know, wire him up to move the parts so they sort of match up with the wireframe that I have. So let's open that guy up in Inkscape, and I'll just show it to you really quick. So here's the character walking template, right? So you could paste your character in here and just move the arms, etc., so they sort of match up to this wireframe underneath. And then when you're done, you can grab that whole strip. And I got the wireframe locked. Let me go turn that layer on. There we go. Unlock it there. Well, locking a layer prevents you from accidentally editing it, right? Which I didn't want to do with the background wireframe. But so now I could pick that whole thing and then file export and export that whole strip out as a bitmap. And tools like GameMaker let you import that strip and turn sure each section into the individual animation frames.
That's fantastic. Boy, that's great news. A lot of people who use GameMaker will love knowing how to create those custom animation characters. That's great. Well, I guess, Brett, that's the secret behind all of your art stuff is you're just drawing squares and circles and, you know, yep. you're not doing real artwork. Nope. You deceived us. No, but actually,
that's right.
It's really good. It's really good. I'm actually impressed to see how you put that together, and I think that is very appealing for developers. So what would you say is the call to action with regard to images and sounds, how to find or make them? What's the final call to action?
Well, on my blog, it was aka.ms/BSGT for Brett Statham Game Tools. And I talk about each of the tools here. We saw a demo of the graphics tools, but there's also links off to Audacity and StageLight there as well. And the only way that you're going to get good at these is to go do it, right? So grab those tools. The only one that cost anything was StageLight. But download them, start playing with them, go through Chris Hildebrand's blog. I link off to that there. And you've just got to create a couple of characters for yourself. And like you said, Michael, it's rectangles and circles and that kind of stuff. So there's really nothing beyond your ability to lay them down on the screen. You just tweak them until you get something that you're happy with. So go forth and create. Have fun with it.
Well, thank you very much, Brett, for joining us for this episode. I appreciate it a lot, all the resources. Everyone should go download those tools and get started. Thank you so much for watching this episode. Stay tuned for another exciting episode coming to you soon.